It's fresher and there's a different level of care that you can feel coming from the people that you're purchasing from.
A new seafood program shortens the time from boat to restaurant. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, June 17th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Kwikluk is about to get a new skate park.
Grown men who came up to me and were kind of angry come up to me later and say, you know what, buddy, I apologize. This is the greatest thing that happened for our kids.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com. Alaska Mental Health Trust beneficiaries are important members of our workforce, from healthcare facilities and nonprofit organizations to retail stores and restaurants. Alaskans who are in recovery or experience developmental disabilities, traumatic brain injuries, or mental health conditions are succeeding in the workplace. The Trust encourages businesses to consider ways in which employing trust beneficiaries can be good for business. Learn more at mhtrust.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust.
Interior Secretary Sally Jewell announced today the government is sending $28.5 million to local governments in Alaska to compensate them for the tax-exempt federal land within their boundaries. It's called Payment in Lieu of Taxes, or PILT, and this year's total is $2 million higher than last year. For some cities and boroughs, PILT is an important part of the budget. Last year, the Matanuska-Susitna borough received $3.2 million in PILT, while the Kenai Peninsula borough got $2.6 million. At the other end of the scale, Yakutat's share was a little more than $100,000. President Obama announced today he intends to vastly expand the Pacific Remote Islands Marine Sanctuary, putting a swath of the South Central Pacific off limits to fishing and energy development. The announcement is part of a high-profile oceans conference taking place this week at the State Department. Australia scientist Ove Ho Goldberg focused on ocean acidification, which he says undermines the entire marine food chain from bowhead whales to plankton and shellfish.
And as the water is acidifying around them, they're having trouble forming skeletons, reproducing, growing, communicating, and navigating around marine habitats.
He says the oceans are acidifying rapidly due to increased carbon emissions. Ho Goldberg says reversing the trend would take 10,000 years or more.
So this is a really long period of time to pass on a broken ocean to future generations. We're not talking about grandkids. We're talking about 300 generations of humans.
Another speaker said the waters of the Arctic and Antarctic will be among the first to face damage because they're colder and therefore take up more carbon dioxide. The conference was aimed more at drawing attention to marine issues than at advancing science. The Obama administration also announced today an intention to crack down on black market fishing. Republican members of Congress are criticizing Obama's planned expansion of the Pacific Sanctuary. Alaska Congressman Don Young says he should have first consulted user groups in the region and worked with Congress. Small boat fishermen out of Kodiak have found a premium market for their catch based on the idea of buying local. The jig fishery uses gear as light as 10 pounds and is open to anyone who buys a permit. A number of restaurants are willing to pay more for fish caught that way. APRN's Steve Heimel reports.
The owners of Anchorage's Beartooth Theater Pub and Grill wanted to use as much local ingredients as possible. But it took a while to get reliable supply lines together for lettuce, beets, potatoes, and other vegetables, even though they are produced here in abundance.
You can say, bring me Alaska-grown produce, bring me Alaska-grown produce. But when someone else brings you Alaska-grown produce, and that's where the dollar goes to, that's the most powerful way that you can say, bring me Alaska-grown produce.
That's Beartooth manager Stephanie Johnson. While a state Alaska-grown subsidy helped, the big factor was the arrival of produce dealer Delicious Dave Thorne's Alaska root sellers, who connected with the producers and cleared up the local supply lines for the Beartooth.
Last summer, we bought 6.4 tons of Alaska-grown romaine.
Now turn to fish. And this time, take the middleman out. Beartooth is one of several retailers and food service vendors who are sourcing Pacific cod and rockfish directly from Kodiak Jig Fisheries. They point that out on their menu, and Johnson says it's something they can easily take pride in.
It's fresher, and there's
a different level of care that you can feel coming from the people that you're purchasing from. So it really just kind of amps up the care and the respect value for what's on your plate all the way from when it reaches the door to when we put it down in front of you.
Jigging can be done from a vessel as small as a skiff. Alaska Jig Association President Darius Kasperzak says their small scale allows for more eco-friendly fishing and a better quality product.
We have that hand-tended ability to take super, super good care of the fish. There's minimal bycatch, since you have very little bycatch in the water. What bycatch you do catch, there's very little mortality because that can be released over the side of the boat. It's also very humane, too. You know, all fishing is, you know, hard on the fish, but the way we do it, the fish aren't on the gear very long. They're bled instantly and into a cold slush water.
The Kodiak Jig Program works similarly to community-supported agriculture in that the customer agrees to the purchase and the price ahead of time. And the price is definitely higher than the general market. And yes, that can be a problem in the restaurant business.
When we started trying to incorporate more Alaska-grown produce into the building, the first experience that we always had was the sticker shock.
Stephanie Johnson said what made Beartooth able to pencil out local produce was the State Agriculture Division's Alaska-grown restaurant rewards program, which puts a 17% subsidy on restaurant purchases.
So for us to move forward with sourcing locally grown food, it was a matter of a lot of logistics. And the restaurant rewards program was a big thing that helped us out with that, because it did take the fear of the cost and drove it down just enough that it was enough for us to take the leap of faith and deal with all of the other logistics that come into play.
There are plenty of logistics. Darius Kasperzak's cod must quickly get to the dock cold, be frozen and wrapped, and shipped by air to Anchorage. But Kasperzak says now he's in charge of the processor and not the other way around, and he already knows what his price is. The Kodiak Jig deal was set up by the Alaska Marine Conservation Council, a small boat advocacy organization. AMCC's executive director, Kelly Harrell, says along with its conservation value, the arrangement works toward food security, resilience, and fairness to the fishermen.
You know, they're risking their lives every day doing what they do to deliver us a great, amazing food product. And we are trying to bring about some shifts in the seafood value chain that help give them more certainty that they're going to get paid a good price for what they're doing. And it relates to AMCC's vision for having people and fishermen living, working, and thriving in coastal communities. So they're community-based fishermen that we're working with that live there year-round.
The state's first community-supported fishery was set up in Sitka 7 years ago. The idea has also been applied to crab, and Harrell says later this year restaurants will see community-supported Bristol Bay salmon. In Anchorage, I'm Steve Heimel.
A new Fairbanks area wildfire drew a major response last night. Alaska Division of Forestry Information Officer Sam Harrell reports that ground and air resources were tapped to attack the Steel Creek fire near mile 4 of Chena Hot Springs Road.
We sent several crews out there and also had quite the air show going. Both scoopers were working out there, as were both the tankers. They got a handle on it there as the evening came on.
Harrell says the fire was burning between the Little Chena River and Chena Hot Springs Road in a critical management area. It's estimated to have burned about 45 acres. Harrell credits the heavy response with reining in the blaze.
We were fortunate that we're not real busy yet in this fire season, and we had a lot of crews available to get right on this, and the aircraft too.
Harrell says firefighters are mopping up the fire area today. He attributes the Steel Creek fire to lightning from thunderstorms that rolled through the area yesterday afternoon. He says no other fire starts are known of right now, but could materialize later today. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a celebration participant loses a dance paddle to a thieves.
You know, the yellow cedar itself is a pretty expensive piece, you know, but the design and the paddle to me is pretty priceless.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's business dreams grow for more than 90 years. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. And by Crowley. Celebrating 60 years in Alaska, Crowley knows Alaska and uses that experience to deliver project solutions from concept to completion. More at CrowleyAlaska.com.
The largest labor union representing Alaska Marine Highway System workers has a tentative agreement for a new 3-year contract with the state. The Inland Boatmen's Union of the Pacific and the Alaska Department of Administration reached the agreement last week after more than 6 months at the bargaining table. KTOO's Casey Kelly reports.
The IBU represents about 650 Alaska Marine Highway System employees. While the proposed contract does not include a pay increase in the first year, workers would get a 1% raise in year 2 and a 2% increase in year 3. Some employees would get additional increases to make their wages more competitive with other jobs in the maritime industry. IBU Regional Director Ricky Deesing says the union's negotiating team believes it's the best possible deal and is urging members to ratify it.
We fought for almost 7 months to get fair treatment for our members, and we believe that's what came out of this negotiation.
The state backed off a controversial proposal to change how the cost of living differential is calculated for ferry workers who live in Alaska. Those employees currently get an in-state salary adjustment based on Seattle wages. The state wanted to change the base city to Anchorage for all new employees hired after the start of the contract. During this past legislative session, the IBU and other maritime unions came out strongly against a bill that mirrored the state's position. The legislation, Senate Bill 182, did not pass.
We weren't willing to give up and allow future work to be paid less.
The two sides agreed to freeze the cost of living differential for the duration of the contract, meaning employees won't get any additional geographic adjustment as part of the negotiated wage increases. Administration Commissioner Curtis Thayer says the state is trying to keep the cost of running the Marine Highway System in check. The state operating subsidy averages more than $100 million a year, according to recent financial reports for the agency.
So when you have one sector of state government costing potentially $1 billion in less than a decade, then there has to be looked for savings. And any time that you're negotiating wages and benefits, that's one of them.
Last month, IBU members voted overwhelmingly to authorize a strike if negotiations failed. Thayer says that wasn't much of a factor in reaching the tentative agreement. Deesing says it was a show of solidarity, but the union never threatened a strike and had hoped to avoid one.
The bottom line, I believe that the state understood that they needed to come to an agreement to take care of their employees.
The state is still negotiating with the other two unions representing ferry workers, the Marine Engineers Beneficial Association and the International Association of Masters, Mates, and Pilots. Thayer says the state won't budge much from the deal struck with the IBU.
IBU has set the stage, and we're not going to differ for those other two unions.
The current contracts for all three unions expire June 30th. Now that IBU has a tentative agreement, Deesing says its members will continue working under the current contract. He expects a ratification vote to take place in the next 2 months. The Alaska legislature must approve the financial terms of the deal. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
GCI celebrated the launch of 3G data service in Bethel by flying in 6,000 McDonald's cheeseburgers on Friday. Residents in the community have been frustrated by slow connection speeds through GCI. KYUK's Ben Matheson stopped by to see how the new data system is working.
Standing near the more than 100 people in line for burgers, GCI's Vice President for Wireless Services, Dan Boyette, says crews are continuing to tweak the network, but it appears to be functioning as intended.
All of those things that people really had trouble doing before, like browsing the internet or sending pictures, that sort of thing, all work fine now with the 3G speeds, where it's really tough with 2G or the edge speed. So it's a huge improvement, and it's something we want to keep doing throughout Western Alaska.
GCI has invested millions of dollars over the past several years, including work to build the Terra Southwest fiber optic and microwave tower connections. Boyette says tests show smartphones getting 6 to 7 megabits per second download speeds. He says people who don't have smartphones should see better performance because the old networks are seeing less demand from smartphones. Paul Landis is Senior Vice President for Consumer Services He spent the afternoon talking with customers.
So the feedback we're getting is all really good feedback. People are very happy, clearly being able to do things that they weren't able to do in the past. And so it's kind of an exciting launch. So everybody seems pretty happy.
As Bethel's Henrietta Knight waited in line for her cheeseburger, she said she's not satisfied with her service.
Every time I go to use my 3G service in the evening, connect with some Siri or whatever it is for the internet, I cannot get on. And when I call them, they say, oh, we're having problems there.
Knight says she asks for a credit on her account, but adds that GCI won't give her that. Bethel residents' years-long struggle with data services has gone to a new level this year and reached the courts. This spring, at the same time GCI's 3G launched, attorneys filed a class action lawsuit on behalf of several customers against GCI. They say the company did not live up to what was promised in cell phone contracts. Representing the plaintiffs, Bethel attorney David Henderson said Monday that GCI had filed a motion for dismissal, to which the plaintiffs had responded. They're now waiting to hear back from GCI's attorneys. As that process slowly works its way in court, 10 other communities near Bethel will get 3G service. By November, the service should be up and running in Tulixac, Queethluck, Akiak, Akichuk, Kasigluk, Nunapachuk, Udmouthluk, Napakiak, Nabuskiak, and Oscarville. In Bethel, I'm Ben Matheson.
A Fairbanks woman is part of a team trying to get a new party on the Alaska ballot. Maria Rensel is running as an Alaska Constitution Party candidate for lieutenant governor. Rensel says the campaign is all about breaking up the lock Republicans and Democrats have on Alaska politics.
They're a duopoly and they work together. And so this is an effort to basically break up a monopoly or a duopoly.
Rensel is trying to get on the ballot along with gubernatorial candidate J.R. Myers of Haines. They both have to gather signatures of 3,017 registered voters, which is 1% of Alaska voters. If successful and they garner at least 3% of the vote in the November general election, the Alaska Constitution Party would join the Democratic, Republican, Libertarian, and Alaskan Independents as official political parties, which can field candidates without having to gather signatures. Rensel, who hosts a Facebook page dedicated to freeing convicted Fairbanks militia leader Schaefer Cox, says the Alaska Constitution Party is affiliated with the National Constitution Party and is predicated on the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and the U.S. Constitution.
Common law, the rule of law, the real law of the land. So it's an effort really to decentralize power.
Rensel's running mate J.R. Myers says the campaign is about getting the Alaska Constitution Party on the ballot, noting it shares ideology like the right to life with the Republican Party.
The Republican Party platform often sounds good and sounds very constitutional, but they have failed election cycle after election cycle upon obtaining power. They have failed to implement the policies in a consistent, ideologically consistent way.
Myers cites continued government growth under Republican administrations that's led to deficit spending. He also advocates for changing the Alaska Constitution to bring it more in line with the U.S. Constitution and return mineral rights to landowners.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Nana Regional Corporation and Tech Alaska, celebrating 25 years of resource development and partnership at the Red Dog Mine. If you're having trouble taking medications or forgetting to take pills on time, there's help available for these serious common problems. Talk to your prescriber or pharmacist right away and visit meded.alaska.gov. There you'll find tips on safety, saving money, and more. When you take your medications as directed, you protect your health and independence. Protect your future. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Juneau police are looking for someone responsible for a racial incident during the recent Celebration 2014 event in the capital city. The incident occurred Saturday morning when dancers in regalia from around southeast Alaska were marching in a parade through downtown Juneau. A white male confronted a Native veteran who was among a group of flag bearers that led the parade. The unidentified man yelled racial slurs, tried to spit on the American flag, grabbed it, and then tried to run off with it. Bystanders wrestled the flag away from the man before he fled. Juneau Police Lieutenant Chris Sell says a half dozen people were involved in the incident that lasted only a few seconds.
It was shocking for the people involved to have somebody just have this completely socially unacceptable outburst that became physical. I think most of us go through life not really expecting to see that. Even as a police officer, and maybe especially as a police officer, people don't normally act that way within the view of the general public.
Officers in a vehicle and on bicycles, including Lieutenant Sal, were on duty during the parade. They searched the area, but they couldn't find the man. Juneau police are also looking for an aggressive thief or thieves who helped themselves to several items from vehicles parked in the lot of a Capital City theater. One of the stolen items was a dance paddle used during celebration. Wilbur Brown of Sitka says his paddle was covered up in the bed of his pickup.
You know, the Yellow Cedar itself is pretty expensive piece, you know, but the design and the paddle to me was pretty priceless.
Brown says the red and black paddle includes lettering of Kia Kwan, the name of his dance group in Cake. He says he was initially hurt and shocked that someone would steal such a personal item, but the incident will not dissuade him from returning to Juneau for future celebration events.
Talking it over with my wife and some of my family, you know, is that we're not going to let anything like this discourage us, you know, from having to get together with our people. And, you know, these celebrations are about us getting together, showing our strength, you know, feeding off of each other and just spending time enjoying one another. You know, the natural high that I receive from dancing and being with my own people and, singing and just getting along, you know, I can't let something like this take away from it.
Lieutenant Sell says it's possible that a brazen smash and grab late last month at the same theater parking lot was a test run for the thieves. In that incident, a woman reported her purse and iPhone stolen after someone broke the vehicle window. Young people in the Kuskokwim village of Kwithluk will soon have a chance to do something few of them have done before, ride in a skate park. Construction of the new park will begin next month. It's the first of its kind in the YK Delta. KYUK's Charles Enoch has more.
That's not the sound of an Alaska Airlines jet flying over. That's the sound of an expertly executed skateboard stop at the Bethel Skate Park. It's a sound not yet familiar in the village, but that's about to change in the community of Kwithluk, about 20 miles upriver from Bethel. Construction materials are now being gathered to a Seattle, Washington barge company. The funding comes from a grant provided by Indian Health Services for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation's Diabetes Prevention Program. Kwithluk, in cooperation with YKHC, hired a company suited for such a construction called Native Skate Parks. The company owner, Greg Mize, shares his experiences with formerly concerned parents before and after the grand opening ceremonies.
Adults who said, oh, they'll break their heads, or oh, we need to do this instead. And they'll drive by and they'll see 30, 40, 50 kids there. And I'd be standing there, and grown men who came up to me and were kind of angry come up to me later and say, you know what, buddy, I apologize. This is the greatest thing that happened for our kids.
The project partners give the community youth an avenue to be more active to combat obesity, give kids something to strive for, and help kids avoid negative activities. YKHC Office of Environmental Health pitched an idea to many villages as part of their diabetes prevention program, but they say only Kwithluk was interested. According to YKHC, another reason Kwithluk is a good choice was its close proximity to other villages like Akiak and Akiachuk. The skate park, or skate dot, a term used to describe smaller skate parks, will be 30 feet wide and 50 feet long. The rectangular skate dot will sport quarter pipes on both ends, crossed by a row of ramps and rails cutting through the center. With all these fun features, Kwithluk City Clerk Anna Galila says there's a staff member at YKHC Environmental Health with extensive skateboard experience who's promised another surprise for the youth there.
Brian Brube is going to give lessons, and they're going to hand out skateboards and safety helmets, pads.
Mice says construction supplies for the Kwithluk Skate Dot should land there on or around the 7th of July. Then after a couple of weeks, construction should begin.
And then 20 days later, you should have a skate park. We're just going to go there to work because we don't goof around.
a privilege he hopes kids in Gwithlak will enjoy as long as they wear safety gear. One of many new safety ordinances already implemented by village officials. You can find out more about these ordinances and photos for the plans at kyuk.org. In Bethel, I'm Charles Enoch.
A ribbon-cutting ceremony for a new public facility was held last week in downtown Ketchikan. The christening of the Stedman Thomas Neighborhood Loo attracted about 40 people on a sunny and windy morning. KRBD's Maria Dudzak was there for the dedication and official first flush.
With public restrooms few and far between in downtown Ketchikan, the much-needed facility was opened lightheartedly with plungers, poo cookies, and toilet paper for napkins on hand. Borough Transit Director Kyan Reeve says the state-of-the-art design is used in Portland, Oregon, and cost less than $100,000.
This bathroom is really quite high-tech. There's some, as you can see, the louvers on it allow for self-policing, policing by the community. When you see more than one set of legs in there, you know that you probably need to call the authorities. The lighting itself is even a special anti-vein lighting. It's kind of a bluish color, the same color as your veins, making it hard to use illicit drugs in there.
Reeve says the facility is very sparse with only a toilet and hand sanitizer. The hand sanitizer is mounted outside the bathroom. He says this makes it easy to clean and eliminates the hotel effect. Reeve says a sink and mirror can attract people to stay. Reeve, Borough Mayor Dave Kiefer, and City Mayor Lou Williams III were among the speakers, along with Major Lonnie Upshaw of the Salvation Army. Mayor Kiefer was the first to speak.
People come to Ketchikan and they don't really ask about the bears, or the fish, or the rain. They ask a simple question. Anyone who has a business along this area knows what that question is. And now you can say, over there, we have one.
Mayor Kiefer, holding a golden plunger, cut the ribbon, officially opening the loo, and christened it with a ceremonial first flush. Public art was also revealed during the ceremony. Metalsmith Rich Stage created four plant hangers that are mounted at the top of two lampposts on the bus shelter near the loo. In Ketchikan, I'm Maria Dudzak.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Casey Kelly and Matt Miller in Juneau, Ben Matheson and Charles Enoch in Bethel, and Maria Dudzak in Ketchikan. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reported from Juneau and Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. First National Bank Alaska, who believes that success isn't simply having an idea, it is knowing the right lender to help bring it to life. More at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. And by Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. Join the majority of Alaskans who understand that exposure to secondhand tobacco smoke endangers their health. The toxins in secondhand smoke go everywhere the blood flows, to all organs of the body, creating cellular changes that lead to cancer, heart attack and stroke, miscarriage and other diseases. For more information on how to eliminate exposure to secondhand smoke, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.